Welcome to the Free and Open Source Software Podcast Series featuring presentations from the FOSS-VT Conference at Lake Maury Inn Resort.
This year's podcast were recorded and produced by Tech Advocates from St. Albans, Vermont. This episode features Mr. Bates and Sinnott Armstrong talking about team-based programming for students. Hope you enjoy it!
We're here for this talk, right?
Yeah.
Soon? Okay, good.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna go ahead and start since the time has arrived. We are going to give a discussion on this programming project that we did using Linux, MySQL database, and MERB. I'm Marion, and he's Nick. And our credentials are on the board there. He's a senior at Hanover High who's been programming for really a long time. And I'm the tech supervisor for the district that includes that high school. And I've been doing Linux system administration and some database web stuff for about 7 years or so, 8 years. Hanover High's got 700 students, and it's a public school in Hanover, New Hampshire. They instituted a program last year and continued it this year called March Intensive, which was a week long where they suspend normal classes and come up with a set of offerings that are interesting non-standard topics taught by a lot of community members, teachers that normally teach science, might teach a music class. It's very open-ended, and all the kids participate. It's a non-graded thing, and it's all day every day for or half day, whatever. They basically spend a week in a total immersion courses on something that they wouldn't have otherwise done. And we just had that a little over a month ago. And we had to, I don't know what was done last year. I guess it was done with a lot of pencils and papers. But this year, Nick's on the March Intensive Committee. They decided to do online course registration and have the course listing and all of that done electronically. So this is what we took on. And again, it's pretty technical. If you're not a web programmer or something, this may leave you a little cold. But we're just going to kind of fly through. And I'm actually going to...
Are you guys like a technical audience? Or?
Yeah, what's your background? Overview of the problem, as it were, is that the March Intensive thing is so different from the rest of what the school does in terms of length of courses and locations and the kinds of courses and who teaches them. None of this would fit into our existing student information system. So we wanted to come up, we basically just sort of wrote a whole other student information system just for March Intensive. And because we wanted students to be able to browse course offerings and sort and search by whatever kind of criteria having to do with the length of the course, half day, full day, all weeks, half the week, and location, things like that. We wanted them to be able to register themselves, or at least attempt to make requests for them for the courses they wanted to take, all electronically, all through a web interface. And we had to be able to deal with constraints like not having students sign up for two classes that overlap, things like that. All the basic stuff in any kind of electronic course registration system. So you'd have to worry about all of this. Again, that gets into the authentication needed to avoid mistakes in signing up, bogus signups, that kind of thing. We also wanted the administrator teachers to be able to view that registration information, have a sense of how many students were signing up for which classes ahead of time. And we wanted to make it look the way we wanted. A teacher on the March Intensive Committee had developed a web interface template, a web interface that they liked, that we wanted to also integrate with this. So didn't want it to just be, we could have made it completely functional but ugly. We also wanted it to be pretty. So, of course, public school, we don't have any time or money. And it was already had to happen yesterday when we thought of it, right? So, so then what we had available was an in-house Linux server, Fedora Core 9. I'm a Fedora weenie. And I run that and do websites for other projects within the district, as well as the main district sites are hosted there. We were able to leverage some of what we had in PowerSchool, like all the students' names and IDs and things like that. Locker numbers, a lot of communication goes on with notes taped to lockers. A teacher, who's not here today, but was on the March Intensive Committee, had designed a nice web template, and get him. So, program the whole thing. There were some privacy security issues that we had to keep in mind also, like, for example, student IDs are somewhat private. The student is supposed to know them. Those are frequently used to, when a student's taken an exam and the ID grades are posted by ID number. So we wanted to be able to use those to help authenticate student signups, but not necessarily be giving the entire database of student IDs to a student. That could be, you know, sensitive. So we were able to, you know, do some hashing for security to make it so that they could still do a comparison when the student would go to register for the course, enter their ID number, and we'd have a piece of code that would be able to take that and make sure it was legitimate, that it matched the student's name or whatever, without actually revealing it. Also, being this was going to be running on a shared server that does a whole bunch of stuff for the district, that's some of which is mission critical as much as it can be with a school, we needed to be careful about not stepping on each other's toes, especially when it comes to custom code. There would, again, be potential issues with, you know, letting a student run wild on the district's web server. So we had to keep that in mind as well, the shared server factor. So one of what Nick came up with was the use of this thing, MERV, which, snagged that blurb there, but it's a Ruby environment that you could probably talk about better than I can, right?
Yeah, so essentially what MERV is, have you guys all heard of Ruby on Rails?
I heard of.
Essentially what it allows you to do is really easily write framework. It's like a framework for designing web pages, and it's built on this model of your controller paradigm. Essentially, you have models, which are the data that you are using for whatever purposes you have within the site. In our case, it was the courses, the students, their choices, all that other stuff is all models. And then you have the view, which is how it looks, and we were given that by one of the teachers. And then the controller is how you put all that stuff together. So essentially what MERV does is it separates those three into different sections, and you can modify them independently, and it makes it really easy to make your site have a different view if you want to change something, or easily add a model if there's more data. Like, we just added surveys so that we could get results from the March Intensive program. Really easy to add those in. And it's a lot like Ruby on Rails. We'll talk about it more later.
One of the just sort of side features of MERV is it has its own built-in web server. He was able to test, develop code, deploy, do all kinds of stuff without ever potentially interfering with the other things running on the server. Had there been a huge vulnerability or some bug in the code, worst case, it crashes MERV, it leaves the rest of the server running. That's just a nice feature that we could have gotten around that if that hadn't been there, but conveniently it was. And he pointed out that it's, you know, potentially lower performance than Apache, but again, it's 700 students. This is a relatively small amount. Even if they all hit it at once, it'd probably be just fine. So, more or less, we started with the course offerings for March Intensive and built a MySQL database to hold them. So that's a relational database, SQL, standard query language, structured query language. And then, if I'm correct with this, student signups began. So the students were told to go to this website, enter your name, enter your student ID, make your course requests, and at this point we had no authentication going, so they could have been typing in Mickey Mouse wants to take everything and that'd be fine, because what we then did later was take that exported data from PowerSchool and use that to error check the signup data. So that caught, you know, any, I guess, bogus or duplicate or mistaken signups that might have happened.
The reason why we did it that way is because we had no time. Like, literally we finished the website 2 days before the people signed up, so it was a very tight schedule, and because of that, we couldn't integrate all that stuff. But for next year, if the program runs again, then all that setup is already in place, so it'll be really easy to make it all integrated, and we won't have to worry about doing the comparison.
Right, so it would error check live on the fly, so it would just refuse a sign up or whatever if the student's name or ID was wrong, rather than us catching it and throwing it away later. So I don't think we had a lot of bogus sign ups or anything. There was no, like, prank attempt or whatever you know of. We're not going to get into the details of relational databases, but this is just a tiny taste of it, right? I don't know how much experience anyone has, but you can kind of look at this and get a sense of what's going on. This is the database. Each of these is a table. I guess you can kind of think of a table as a spreadsheet. less, and then, I don't know, each field in the table is a cell in the spreadsheet. It's not a great metaphor, but sort of. And so there are tables here that hold actual data, like students' names and grade, whatever, locker number, things like that. There are tables that hold courses, course information, and when it's offered, and who teaches it, and all of that sort of human important readable data. And then there are also tables that link things together, and that's all part of database relationality. That we're just, yeah, we don't have time to really get into that, and it's boring anyway. But, you know, and if, for example, the courses table contains all of these fields. So, you know, you can pretty much guess about what most of those mean, if not all of them. So this is the model. This is the data. And then this is a part of controller code written in Ruby, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
this is the Ruby code that we used to implement the site. And this was some of the really early stuff that we did with trying to allow people to see the course offerings on the website instead of having to get print out, you know, 40 copies of these papers like we did last year. So really simple. I mean, I can show you, there's like, you know, morning would be the website. So you visit intensive.dresden.us was the name of the website, /courses/morning, and it would tell you to find all of the morning courses. And this is the code essentially that runs that. You have a bunch of options here which basically set up the layout how you want it to, because there's a layout engine, so that way you can change things within the display instead of having to worry about that ahead of time. And then the actual line which does stuff with this, which looks up data from the model and uses that to display content to the user, is the line here. What it does is it finds all the courses and orders them by activity, which is the name of the course, ascending, so basically just alphabetically, and then ensures that the time when they're occurring is in the morning. And that's basically what finds the courses for you. And then you render the page with render, and that's all you have to do to add the morning page to the database.
Now, are focus and submit loads, or are those just for responding to entries? Like, that's a no.
Right. So, exactly.
So it's gonna come with a prompt, submit load, or whatever, you say no.
Right. It'll rewrite. It does JavaScript rewriting with the Ruby. So if there is a password field on it, that'll automatically select it on the page, so that way you don't have to worry about people accidentally missing the password or whatever. It's just, it makes it easier for them, and I was too lazy to make it work without those. So,
so each of those are basically variables.
Right. The at sign means that it's a instance variable.
Mm-hmm.
So for every copy of it, you have your own little
right.
No or yes or
right.
So that's essentially how the controller works. And you can get a lot more complicated than this. When we switch over to the actual server, which is running the laptop, I can show you more details about other pages. But essentially, that's Ruby. And then you go into the view. And we were given the view. I can show you what that is, but you write these files that are morning.html.erb, and it just templates HTML code with Ruby. So this is all HTML, standard HTML. You can write whatever you want here.
Right, so the teacher gave us a very standard HTML CSS static website, and then pieces of it, and then we embedded things, like that, right?
Yeah. So this is actually the entire morning.html.erb file. This is all we had to write in order to get the page, which we're about to show you up. And what partial does is it takes every element of the courses array, which was courses find all with the half morning AM cap courses, and each one of those it will then put into shared/course, which is a file which tells it how to render each individual course. And I'll show you that file once we get over to the server. But you can think of it as this is all we had to write in order to get the morning AM activities up and running. A lot easier than trying to do it all by hand. And then there's also this application layout. And I mean, you can imagine that the website has more to it than just that little bit of code that we showed you before. And what this is the layout for the entire website. And it's this big, you know, probably 500-line application.html.erb. And it contains all of the details of the layout that we were given by the teacher. And essentially, just write normal doc type and then HTML code for the framework. And wherever in the body you want to put the content for each individual page, you write the cache content for layout. And MERV does support other stuff, like you could have multiple different cache contents for different layouts if you wanted to have multiple boxes where you added content. But for our purposes, this is all that was necessary for getting everything up and running, and we didn't have much time, so this is how we went with it.
I think that's it for that, and so we'll now switch over to you, and I may duck out to go do the elk thing. So
we knew there wasn't going to be very good internet here, so we actually ran everything on this computer as well. So this is the So, you know, we're running the server. In order to actually run the server, you just type MERV, and it'll start everything up for you. And we use a few extensions. MERV has Flash, allows us to use display things on the next page, which say, successfully entered results for this query, or successfully added a student. It just that's not built into MERV. You have to add in this MERV has Flash extension, but it's really easy. You just install it and say you want to use it. And then Google Triad allows us to do cool pictures, so I can show you that too. Open up whatever web browser you feel like, and then this is on local. It runs on port 4000. You can switch that, but that's the default. And this is what the page looked like. And this is what's currently running on the server at school, assuming nothing broke, which probably didn't. And it doesn't look very good up here. Well, anyway, you can see this is the layout of it, and what we are given is a framework for how the teacher who actually knows something about web design felt that it should look. This is the design minus the pictures, but essentially what I did was just took the content from each individual page and stuck it into this framework. So this is what we're running, and all this is static content right here, but you can easily add dynamic content. So for the all courses activities, that was a lot, or let's go to the morning one. That's the one that you guys saw. That would be the AM activities. Oh no. All right.
Go ahead. No database server.
Yeah. I don't automatically start my SQL because it takes up a lot of time. So let's go to the morning activities. And these are the individual things. This is the text that we showed you for the presentation. And then each individual activity had that partial, which rendered the activity right here. That's essentially how you set up the framework for displaying stuff in MERV. And the idea is that you can add whatever content you want to the site and easily add, like let's suppose you want to change how it's displayed, you would just change that partial view and each individual one of these would change. So we had problems because the back to top right here was closer to the bottom one than it was to the top one, so it was confusing. And you just delete a carriage return in the file and it'll go away. So here are the actual activities that we did. And I mean, these are all essentially the same. They're just the different activities. If you go to all course activities, this was, again, another page. And looking at the source for this one, darn, I didn't say default. All right, I'm just going to
So it's an app, and then views, and all. Oops, sorry. App view courses, all. Here's the actual file, which renders all of that content. And you can see here that. Except that you can't read. Anyway, it just has a bunch of layout information for how it was designed. There's another page that we are given for the view, and it will render all the content with that in mind. So they're divided into categories, and each category was given its own variable in the controller, which allows you to specify how it should be presented. Does that make sense? Basically, you're setting your content up to be based on whatever relations you want it to be in the code.
So this file gets called by that first one you showed us?
Yeah, exactly. The render, what that does is it takes all of the HTML.erb file.
Yeah.
It replaces all the Ruby variables in it with whatever the results are for that execution of that code. And then it will stick that in the middle of the application.html.erb file where that cache content is, and that'll be rendered as an HTML page. And you can do whatever you want with that. I mean, in theory, you could even put PHP within that if you felt like it, or run JavaScript. We run a lot of JavaScript for the form, so if you have a student sign up, then here's a student sign up form, and we didn't want to make it so that people could sign up for a full day activity and also a half day and a morning as their morning and afternoon, all as their first choice, because they should only be allowed to sign up for one. So what happens is when you select one of these, it calls the JavaScript to disable the other two.
Cool.
So it'll actually limit you to, and if you do an AM course, it won't let you select a full day. You go like that, and then all that, and there's JavaScript to get the button to light up, and when it submits it, it'll actually enable all of the buttons again because of the way the code's written. But you can easily set it up to do pretty much all of that stuff automatically. Do you guys have any questions about how to write code with MIRB, or are you interested in looking at any specific aspects of it?
Those questions about writing code with MIRB would take us way after. How did you select MIRB? What drew you to MIRB?
Well, I've done some PHP stuff, and I've done work with plain HTML, and we really wanted to make the integration between the individual views for these half-day activities here and the all courses to be pretty seamless. You click on one of these and the other one will show up. Again, JavaScript. And it was one of the things that I liked about MIRB was that it really easily separated the view of the content from the actual code. And I have a lot of experience with just writing HTML code, and to be able to just write HTML and stick in what I want to, instead of having to worry with PHP about having individual locations where you stick things in and having huge files and stuff like that, what MIRB really did well was kind of made the distinction between the model, the view, and the controller very clear. We had Marion, who's really good with MySQL and could deal with all the database stuff, but didn't know anything about the rest of it. And then the teacher who did the views, he knows a lot about making stuff pretty, so all I had to do was connect the two. And I don't have very much experience with doing, large-scale database stuff, and it seemed to me like MIRB was easier to do that with than PHP. I was going to originally use Ruby on Rails, but MIRB is designed to be faster and run better than Rails. And in fact, they're merging with each other, so it doesn't really matter by the time, probably this summer, I think, is when they're planning on doing that release. But I'd say the thing that made MIRB unique was that the model view controller distinction, and it makes it easy to change one thing and not have to worry about the rest of it.
Cool.
Something you should know about Nick is he's constantly playing with different things. I mean, how many of these kinds of things have you played with over the course of the last few years? Because you tell me about at least one a week. So I'm a tech coordinator at Hanover High, and I had nothing to do with any of this, which is even better, because everybody else just took care of it, which was fantastic.
It's better except for one thing. You're a student?
Yes.
Okay. It's better except for one thing.
He's graduating this year.
Yeah.
It's kind of a problem.
Believe me, I have been holding the magic box in the past.
We've decided to fail him. I've made it a condition.
It's easy enough to keep him.
You've got them.
Yeah, the problem.
Yeah, you're in a power school, right?
Yeah, we could probably fail you on every class this semester, and he'd still have enough credits to graduate. So it really kind of stinks.
He may be able to figure out how to change it
exactly. We'd like him to use his powers for good and not for evil. But the good thing, that's why the collaboration piece is essential. I mean, Marion didn't write this, but she was collaborating with him on this, and she knows enough about it now from collaborating, I think, that she can make edits to it and that kind of thing. And we're always going to have his email. That's why we're advocating, you know, California, no. Just say no to California.
there are a bunch of pages that we set up for staff members that were not accessible to students. And we didn't want to have them all password protected because a lot of them needed to be accessed quickly in case of switches to classes or something. If a student comes up and says, I need to switch classes because of whatever reason, I broke my leg and I can't really do rock climbing, then we need to be able to change that between classes. We can't wait for all of the authentication and logging and that sort of thing. So there are a bunch of pages on this site which are visible but not linked to in any way. So you can access them if you know where they are. And this is the course editing page. So you enter the name of the course, and it'll search through and find the first course alphabetically, which contains that in its name. So in this case, I'm looking at the Adventure Programming class. And here you can edit all this stuff. And it is password protected. The password is stored with another hash on it. So nobody knows what the if you know what the password is, then it'll compare the result of hashing what you gave to it to the previously stored value. If those are the same, then you have the same password. It's pretty much the standard way of doing it so that you don't reveal the password easily. And you can set whatever values you want for the entries in this database, and then enter your password and it'll change them. Another one which I can show you, have you guys ever seen the Google Chart API? It's essentially a really easy way of having a URL specify an entire picture for you, or diagram, or pie chart, or something like that. So we're using it to display results of surveys. We did a few surveys. There's a staff survey, and a student survey, and a community survey. So the most recent survey, we can look at student results. We're still actually tabulating these, but if you look through the results here, it'll actually, this isn't gonna work.
Because it's not the live side, right?
Right, I have to do the login thing here. The Google Chart.
Say it encodes the image in the URL column?
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's weird.
What is it called?
It's
what's the advantage
of
that?
CONT2.
What, sorry?
The
advantage of that is that you offload all of the generation of the pictures to Google, which has a lot better servers than we do. So it takes a lot of the burden off of...
Oh, I see. So it sends it the data.
Right.
And then it generates... Okay, I got
So
you.
Here's the... Google gets the gets these as URLs.
Yeah.
And then it will return an image.
Got it.
Like a whatever .jpg. I mean, I don't know exactly what format it's in. Probably PNG, but... And it generates the images for us. So all we do is send the data, and Google gives back the results. Here's the graph that they generate, and you can see that it's a lot more intuitive to look at than trying to read through numbers, and really, really easy to integrate with MERB. There's the Google_chart library for that, and essentially all you have to do is take the array that you get directly from the database. You choose which field you want to graph, and you send it to Google underscore chart, and it'll do graph it for you. It was two lines of code.
We were taking the staff survey, and as we were taking the staff survey and as they were entering their stuff, the charts were essentially just by refreshing the page, we were getting the results in real time and seeing the chart.
So how does it work? You fill out the survey.
So survey staff. Oh, wait, sorry. I disabled the survey staff. So student survey here.
Yeah.
You have the grade that the person's in,
yeah.
The course they're in, all that stuff, all these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom, it's submit.
Yeah.
And all those fields are then sent to the server, and they are stored in the database. And the database then does whatever it needs to them. And when you query the results back again, in order to get the student results page, it looks through all the fields. I can show you the code for that.
Is it RB or ERB?
It's RB. ERB is for the template. It's being slow because it's running the server. But if you come down here, you probably can't read these. Can you read them any better now?
Yeah, that's a little better.
That's really annoying.
Show.
Right. Windows. There we go. There. So, there's a survey is the data. It's a reference essentially to all of the data that's stored in the MySQL database. And the show function is something that I wrote, which will take a list of values and then a name that you want to give the graph, and it'll actually call the Google Chart API for that value and return a URL. And then each one of these is the URL that is referencing that specific value. And then URL graphs is just a variable which holds all of them. And each one of them is generated independently and then sent to the Google Chart API server, which can then send the values to you. So if you look in the views surveys and then let's get results, it actually just looks through all of the values which are stored in each one of those individual variables, and then it generates an HTML tag for each one, like that. It generates for each of the values in the list of all of the charts that we want to show, it will image SRC equals that. So essentially what it's doing is it's taking the Google URL, making it the source of the image, and generating the data which the URL, the Google image uses from the database. Oh, this is the flash thing I was showing you before. What this lets you do is show values at the top if you have something like when a student's added to a page, like if you were to add a student, let's say he's an 11th grade male, these are all specific things about our school. We can have people who go to Fort Sayre and ski for 6 months, or are in the Hartford Area Career and Technology Center half day. They make their course selections, and let's say they want to do enjoy local food. Okay, that's a really interesting person. Anyway, hit submit, and it will add a student, Joe Schmo, at the top. And what lets you do that is the flash show at the top here. Essentially, I just add to the top of every page. And what it does is it will only show if you have something to show, but what it shows is whatever you tell it to show. And it's just a really easy way to access data between individual pages if you just need to show something once, instead of having to store it in a database about whether or not you want to show it and what it's actually going to show and that sort of thing. You just want to tell the user something really quickly. It's an easy way to do that. So is there anything else that you guys have questions about?
Just think about your next iteration. It seems like you need to set it up so that it keeps track of what horses are full and changes your list of options. So it's first come, first serve.
Well,
have a competition for people to sign up.
There are issues with that.
I know. I'm
actually can't be first come, first serve, but what you need is a waiting list of some sort.
Yeah.
And because you're going to have to go. Somebody's going to have to go in at some point and make decisions.
Yeah, make decisions.
They end up having to do that.
So, yeah, I was going to say, how do you do that? I was just kidding.
We did that by hand this year.
Yeah.
We're slowly progressing in that direction. I mean, before, basically, I had a 800-row Excel spreadsheet, and I had all the courses for everyone in that. And whenever we had a change, I changed that database. And that was painful. And now we have this website, which is great. It tells us all this information, and we're still doing course signups by hand. Hopefully, if we can convince people on the committee to do this, then next year we'll be able to do course signups online, like we did. We have everyone's choices now, and we can test algorithms to see how well we would sign people up based on that, and then use that to generate results about what we want to use to actually assign people to courses.
Yeah, doing that kind of engine. The math between that is pretty
well.
Well, the problem is that in the high school setting, there you have to have some way. Somebody else needs to be able to prioritize who has access to classes. If you have classes that are going to fill up, for example,
seniors get first. I mean, typically the way we seniors get first dibs,
but,
and then juniors.
But you know, guidance counselors will know who needs that class to graduate, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so you're gonna.
The nice
they
thing is this is outside of
that. They need some way to go in and fine-tune that.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be like a college thing where you just keep signing up until everything is full and then you've got to do it again.
Yeah. On this, while they get credit for participating or not participating, it's not graded like a regular class.
Right.
So you have a little more flexibility in this that you wouldn't have in a normal course sign-up.
So this is like enrichment.
It is.
Yeah.
It's 4 days out of the year where essentially we do whatever we want to. Within the constraints of the classes that are offered.
Right.
And that means that, assuming that everyone is happy with their choices, the process works. There's not really any difficulty with trying to fulfill graduation requirements because
right.
The only graduation requirement is that you show up.
Right.
So
once you're signed up, you can't change? Like, does a group of kids find out, oh, they're all doing it, so I want to do that?
Well, that's a little bit of
an issue.
Social aspect.
We have voted both years to not allow changes, and we have allowed changes
both
years.
My motto is everybody's special at Hanover High, and I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but we make a lot of exceptions for things, and most of the time that works.
Yeah, I mean, being with friends is important too.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
just taking a class.
Well, and you know, I've always had things like people sign up for a trip, and either. They break their leg and they can't be on the skiing trip, so they have to be put somewhere else. Or, we've had things where the friends thing, it usually doesn't get changed.
I would say that it's not, we try to limit it to situations where there's like a legitimate reason
right.
not to do it or a legitimate reason to do the other course. For example, some of the courses cost money. So if it turns out that you're not able to pay it, then clearly we can't,
right.
force people to be in that class, and we will switch them to something else. Or if there's some other concern which is brought up, like breaking a leg, or you need to be in a certain class because you're helping to teach it, for example.
Right.
There were some people who did fencing, and there was someone who wanted to be in the class because they were going to be one of the instructors. We kind of have to allow that in order for the class to work out. There are a lot of different concerns than you would normally see in a high school setting. But there are still a significant number of limitations to how we're trying to kind of make these decisions matter, instead of just saying, oh, well, I don't really like that course, let's switch over to something else.
Right. Wasn't there as I understand it, there was a deadline, and everybody had to sign up by the deadline. But
right.
Signing up 3 weeks before the deadline didn't give you more chance of getting into your course than signing up a day before the deadline.
Right.
So during that period before the deadline, they could all talk to their friends and say, let's all put down such and such
right.
as our first choice.
Exactly. They were
so
giving
they had a chance to get together with their friends if they wanted to.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, and they had weeks even before the sign-up happened when they had the course offerings.
Right.
There were 2 weeks when they could do whatever, any of that stuff they wanted to, and we felt that that was enough time for them to make decisions based on friendship.
Yeah.
Of course, if you ended up being the one person out of your friends who ended up getting into a course, then perhaps that might be not how you expected it to turn out, but tough luck. I mean, we can't
yeah.
satisfy everyone.
So I'm assuming that MERV is open source?
Yes, and it's being merged with Rails.
Are there other competitors that you look at other than other products that look similar to MERV?
Yeah, I mean, the big one that I looked at was Rails.
Yeah.
And great environment. It's not quite as easy to use as MERV. MERV has this thing called MERVGen, which generates things automatically for you. So you do MERVGen model, whatever you want to call it, and it will automatically make all the files that you need in order to get that up and running, which saves a lot of time.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is specify how you want your data to be stored in the model, and everything else is already set up for you. MERV has scripts to do that, but they don't always, or sorry, Rails has scripts to do that, but they don't always work out. Another thing that we are considering doing is, you know, just writing it all in PHP, because both Marion and I have experience with PHP. And, I mean, I think that would have worked out well, but...
What time you had.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, whenever you custom roll something, it may be better, but it may be wicked hard to support in the future when you're not there anymore.
Right.
We've had projects that had to be abandoned and recreated because nobody really wanted to sit down and take the time to figure out how it was done before.
Yeah, definitely been there before.
So are the developers of MERV, are they related to a university, or are they just open source guys all over the place? Or?
I'm pretty sure they're just open source guys all over the place. I don't know exactly. I'm not...
Just curious.
Yeah. I don't remember any specific. I mean, they had a conference, like the MERV boot camp kind of conference in England, and then I think they had another one in California. So either they're all over the place and they like to fly a lot, or they're not related to anything in particular. It seems like they're really interested in supporting a lot of different environments. You saw up there that they're ORM agnostic, which essentially means that you can use whatever object relational mapper you want to. The two common ones, the one that I used was Active Record, which is the same one that they use for Rails. And then another one, which is growing in popularity and is pretty much used exclusively with most MERV installs, is DataMapper. When I started this website, it wasn't really as stable as it is now. And I think it's gotten to the point now where essentially it's just as good as Active Record in all respects that Active Record is, and it also has a bunch of additional features. So it was designed to be to all those annoying little quirks with Active Record when you're trying to write a Rails application were then gotten rid of in DataMapper, trying to be consistent. And then there are a few others like SQL ORM. I don't really know much about that. It seems like it's pretty much just a low-level interface to a MySQL or whatever other database you want.
Do you have any guesstimate as how many hours you got into this project?
I don't really know.
Is it a really scary number?
Yeah, it's a scary number.
All I have to say is his family misses
him. Who's this guy?
It's, I'd say probably in the order of, I can't even think about that.
Well, it depends on if it's just your time or your time and Brian's time and Marion's time.
Right.
And
then,
yeah.
But there's also a lot of time saved. I mean, we spent essentially two school days, the entire committee signing people up last year. And this last time, we only spent half a day, and then we did a little bit after school and we were done. So it's a lot less time for everyone else. And of course, next year, it's all here. So we switch it from MI 2008-2009 database to an MI 2009-2010, and then people start adding courses and it's all set up. So we don't have to worry about a lot of the problems that we dealt with this year the next time through.